Chancers, a public affairs program of the Conference of Churches and a production of the 224 Ecospace, where changemakers work, create, and lead. Today we are fortunate to have with us Reverend Todd Yonkman, who serves as the Transitional Senior Minister of the First Congregational Church of Granby. He has served as an ordained minister in the United Church of Christ since 1999. He's been in congregations in the Midwest and Northeast for over 20 years. His ministry focus is helping congregations find their futures. He's also a blogger on leadership, spiritual growth, and congregational transformation. Welcome.
Thanks.
Glad to have you here.
It's great to be here.
So why don't you start out by telling us where you grew up?
I grew up in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
And what was it like in your childhood? How did that form you?
It was a wonderful childhood. I grew up in the Christian Reformed Church. My parents, their parents, their grandparents were all part of the Christian Reformed Church, which was a church, it's conservative, mainly Dutch immigrants to the Midwest. And they really taught me a lot that I still value to this day. They taught me to take the Bible seriously. They taught me to take theology seriously. And they, you know, the folks in the Christian Reformed Church really taught me how to share that love of God with other people. So I really appreciate all of those things. It's a beautiful, small, little world. If you can fit in it, if you can fit in that box, it's a great box. But that's what it was like.
Why do you believe God chose them for your faith formation?
I think because they gave me both a great grounding in faith, but then also some real boundaries to push up against and to question. And it's really been that process of asking the questions, maybe that, you know, make people uncomfortable, maybe that you're not supposed to ask, pushing up against that has really been kind of the energy for my own spiritual growth.
So think about your times as a child and discuss how you came to know God and how you knew God for yourself. What was that like?
Well, I came to know God because through my family, through the church, through the Sunday school. There was one part of the culture, that subculture, was that we had our own school system, and there was even, you know, like this. There was a radio station and a radio program, one called the Children's Bible Hour. And the person who hosted the Children's Bible Hour called himself Uncle Charlie, and he would tell stories, and he had a correspondence course, like a Bible Sunday school correspondence course. And you would fill out, you'd get a little questionnaire in the mail, and you'd fill it out with the Bible verses and send it back in, and you'd get little stickers and stuff. And at the end it said, "Would you like to pray to give your life to Jesus?" And I was 7 years old at the time, and very, you know, I mean, people don't always realize like what a powerful spiritual lives children have.
Absolutely.
And I made that prayer, and that was a real thing for me. And to this day, that was the moment where I'm like, you know, I'm going to do this. And it, again, to some people it may sound strange that a 7-year-old could make that big of a commitment, but I did. And here I am.
And so unpack your experience as that 7-year-old having a spiritual experience. How was that expressed in your childhood life?
Well, it was expressed, through the avenues that I had, which were, I mean, the church was a big part of my life and our family's life. So, you know, all of those different ways through, you know, participating in Sunday school, singing in choir, going to worship, you know, doing different mission projects, all of those sorts of things.
And I think it's a powerful thing because I was one of those children, too, who was having my own little spiritual experience in the midst of these adults who were teaching me certain things. I was raised Roman Catholic, and I was having my own spiritual experiences, but kind of felt like I shouldn't tell some of the grown-ups what was going on between me and God because it might not have fit the rules.
Yeah, well, In my experience, there was a lot of God talk all around. So that part wasn't so strange. The part that really sort of disrupted that straightforward path was when I was in high school. My mom decided that she could no longer ignore her call to ordained ministry, and so she left the church, because in that tradition, the way that they read the Bible, women were not to hold authority in the church. And so she said, you know what, forget that, I'm leaving and I'm going to pursue ordination. And so she did. So, and she just recently, a few years ago, retired, and she served as an ordained minister in the Reformed Church of America for over 20 years. So that was the first moment that got me questioning, and that seemed to provide permission to push up and maybe even cross some of these boundaries that were set up. And then the second moment was not long after that, a year or two after that, my dad came out as a gay man, and that wasn't and still isn't something that fits in that box. And so he left the church, and that really, at that point, you know, I had a real crisis of faith, and I thought, you know, look, if these are the requirements for being a Christian, you know, then clearly my family doesn't fit, and probably I don't fit within Christianity. So I felt like I had a choice. I either needed to find a new way to do Christianity or maybe just not anymore.
And so how did God lead you to a call to ministry?
So it was a step-by-step process. I knew I wanted to go to grad school after college. And I thought I had wanted to be a professor of literature. But instead, there was a moment, again, like a spiritual moment, where kind of God said to me, why don't you go to divinity school? And I said, fine. But I'm not going to be a minister. I will be a professor of religion.
Okay.
But I will study religion. That's it. And so I applied to, I studied theology in Germany for a couple years. I applied to some divinity schools here in the United States. I ended up at University of Chicago Divinity School. I met a woman from Maine who was a Congregationalist, a part of the United Church of Christ, and we started dating. I learned about the United Church of Christ. We ended up getting married, and I thought, you know what? Maybe the United Church of Christ, I'm sure it's not a perfect denomination, you know, no denomination is, but at least there's some space there for me to develop this new, more inclusive way of being a Christian. So that's how I ended up.
So you met this woman who was on the path to ministry, ordination, mm-hmm. and formation. How did you wake up and realize you were too?
Again, it was God came to me again and just said, you know what? No, what you really love even more than books, Todd, is people. And the best way for you really to engage people at a heart level is to be, to do ministry in the local church. And so that's what I did.
We're talking with Pastor Todd Yonkman, and we'll be back after the break.
The blessings come down when the praises go up. The blessings come down. It seems like blessings keep falling in my lap. It seems like blessings keep falling in my lap. I don't make songs for free, I make them for freedom. Don't believe in kings, believe in the kingdom. Chisel me into stone, prayer whistle me into song air. Dying laughing with Krillin saying something about blonde hair. Jesus, black life ain't matter. I know I talked to his daddy. Say you the man of the house now, look out for your family. He has ordered my steps, gave me a sword with a crest, and gave Donnie a trumpet in case I get shortness of breath. Don't be mad.
I'm gonna praise him till I'm gone. When the praises go up,
good God,
the blessings come down,
good God.
When the praises go up, oh,
good God,
the blessings come down,
the blessings come down.
When the praises go up,
oh, oh, the blessings come down,
the blessings come down.
When the praises go up,
good God.
They booked the nicest hotels on the 59th floor, with the big wide windows, with the suicide doors. Ain't no blood on my money, ain't no Twitter in heaven. I know them drugs isn't close, ain't no visit in heaven. I know the difference in blessings and worldly possessions, like my ex-girl getting pregnant and her becoming my everything. I'm at war with my wrongs. I'm writing four different songs. I never forged it or forfeited. I'm a force to be reconciled. They want 4-minute song. You need a 4-hour praise dance performed every morn. I'm feeling shortness of breath, so Nico, grab you a horn. Hit Jericho with the buzzer beater to end the quarter. Watch brick and mortar fall like dripping water. Blessings keep falling in my lap.
Stops and stares for a while, 'cause girl, you're amazing. so sexy, she's so beautiful, and I tell her every day. Oh, you know, I never ask you to change. If perfect's what you're searching for, then just stay the same. So don't even bother asking if you look okay. You know I'll say.
Welcome back. We're talking with Pastor Todd Yonkman, and we're talking about his ministry formation. Tell us about your first ministry appointment. How did that happen?
My first appointment was in West Chicago, Illinois, which is a small railroad town west of Chicago. And it was to a small evangelical and reformed church, which is a German, kind of an ethnic German church, neighborhood church in the town. And at that point in the history of West Chicago, the neighborhood surrounding the church was no longer a German neighborhood. In fact, it was well over 50% Latino. So you have this tiny kind of dying German church in a neighborhood that is predominantly of a different ethnic background. And it was rough. I got kind of thrown into the deep end and had to learn how to help congregations reconnect with that congregation, and then subsequent reconnect with the mission field, discover who they are and find ways to connect. And that basically has been my ministry ever since, because unfortunately too many of our congregations are shrinking, dying, facing existential crisis. And a part of that is because they have become spiritually disconnected from their neighbors.
So. And so unpack that a little bit. Describe your ministry today and how you live that out.
So my ministry today is, as you mentioned at the beginning, I'm now currently the transitional senior minister at First Congregational Church of Granby. And this transition has a particular meaning. It means, you know, kind of what you would think it means. It means that whatever the church, whatever the past of the church has been, is not what the future of the church is going to be. And my role is not to continue what was, but rather to work with the church to imagine a new future that is thriving. And so moving through that transition from being stuck in whatever past it was, moving into the future, that's what I help congregations do.
And so when you think about that act of ministry and transition and helping people and congregations connect to their community, how do you go about making that happen? Because people can be so attached to their legacy and their history that they can't see where they are today.
Well, there are a lot of different strategies for that. Part of it is dealing with the grief work. So usually when churches call me, usually I look for a congregation that already has an awareness that things have to change. That is a huge barrier. It may be surprising to some folks, but a lot of churches die because they don't know that they're dying, and there are stories that you wouldn't believe of like 3 80-year-olds sitting in a 500-seat sanctuary, and one turns
wow.
to the other and says, "Maybe we should do something." By that time, it's too late. So usually, I look for those congregations that already have an awareness. Like, look, they are looking at the trend lines. They're like, "We got to do something different." So first, so to help them deal with that grief, that some of the thing that they're not what they once were, and offering them some hope. Like, there are some things that we can do, to create a sustainable future. And then a lot of it then is me personally taking the leadership and networking in the community and building relationships in the community, and then teaching the congregation how to do that, how to build authentic relationships, how to share their faith. A lot of the folks, and this is where some of my kind of evangelical upbringing kind of helps, because I have no problem. I mean, talking about my faith was something that all of us naturally did. The churches that I serve now, people really, it is a very strange concept to them. It's sort of, faith is kind of a private thing that you don't really, and they really don't know how to do that. So I try to encourage them and help them find their own faith stories and to value them, to value their faith.
And so when you talk about helping communities and individuals share their faith stories, what do you mean by that?
Well, I do a lot of modeling. So a lot of my preaching is kind of, biographical, and I talk about my own faith journey, and I try to share, what my faith means to me. We do, workshops in helping people just kind of talk with each other, share, so it's a safe space. And then we do events out in the community, like invitational events that make it really easy for people just to, sometimes just teaching, helping people feel comfortable inviting, like, "Hey, we're having a blessing of the animals service. Why don't you come? I know you have a pet that you love.
Bring Fido."
Exactly. Or, "We're having a community barbecue. Come and, let us feed." So creating opportunities for them just to practice inviting people. Those sorts of things. It's very, very simple.
You talk about the grief work. And I'm serving a congregation now that has a tremendous legacy. And it's hard for them to recognize who they are today because they still think that their mothers and grandmothers are in the kitchen cooking. And they're not there anymore.
Right.
The generation is now. Mm-hmm. So how do you help people let go of the past to see where they are and go through that grief?
That's a difficult process. A big part of that is dealing with shame. On some sense, the congregations that I work with, they know that they aren't the congregation that they used to be. And there's this underlying feeling of, why don't people why don't people love us anymore? Why don't, what's wrong? What did we do? Why don't people love us anymore? And the unhealthy direction is to start, a lot of times there's casting about and casting blame and all of that sort of stuff. And so part of it is just saying, you know, like, look, we're gonna bless what was. No one was doing anything wrong. No one was doing anything. And even now, like, no one is doing anything bad. It's just that the things that you're doing are just not connecting with the people who are your neighbors. And to explain to them, the model of church used to be that each generation replaced the next. You know, so the parents replaced the grandparents and the kids replaced the parents. That's not happening anymore. And there are all kinds of reasons for that. You know, we don't need to, like, blame. Again, like, don't talk to me about soccer games. Don't talk to me about that. That is not helpful. The point is, that's not the way it works anymore. So we need to go out to find the people that God has prepared, who have spiritual needs, who are lonely, who are hurting, who are looking for a word of hope. And they're looking for it not from me, from you. They're looking for it from you. Can you just do that? God will bring the blessings in. All you need to do is just to share your heart with someone.
And what you said is so powerful, that in many instances, people are in faith communities that represented a certain neighborhood at a certain time. And now the neighbors are different. Mm-hmm. And when you talk about this idea of the mission field could be your neighborhood and your neighbors who are not the people that once were. Right. And so how do you help people be open to the possibility that the demographics of your church could possibly change as you reach these new neighbors?
So that, obviously, depending on what the demographics are, we will have conversations around those issues. So sometimes it's generational, and that's a hard thing, especially for older generations. They really, I don't know what it is, but maybe it hasn't sunk from their heads down to their hearts that their children and their grandchildren are a completely different culture from them.
And that might be the mission field, their own children and grandchildren.
Exactly. So that's one possibility. Another possibility, you know, beginning in, as I said, in West Chicago, and then in downtown Providence, and then again in downtown Stamford, where there's, you know, racial and ethnic changes in a different mix in the community. A big part of those ministries have been very powerful, what we call sacred conversation on race. Those have been very transformational conversations. And I really feel very honored to have been a part of those. And those conversations are so powerful, because it feels like you're really getting at, it's not just something about this particular congregation or this particular neighborhood or community, but getting at some of the deep stories of our country and even of our world to a certain extent, but particularly to the history of the United States of America. And deconstructing those biases. And again, a lot, the people that I work with a lot, they're nice people, they're loving people, and they don't see. You know, I kind of said, like, let's just start with the premise that, you know, especially if you're a white person in this room, we're all racist. Okay, let's just start from there, and then build, and then have a conversation out from that, and say we're recovering, you know, and look at our biases in an honest way, and those have been really transformational moments.
We're talking with Pastor Todd Yockman, and we'll be back after the break. Been listening to Rich Answers, a public affairs program of the Conference of Churches.
I've been running in circles, jumping the hurdles, getting caught in that rush of doing so much. I'm feeling kind of worn out. All this checking the boxes, trying to be flawless, has me spinning my head, catching my breath, too afraid to slow down. I tell myself to keep this up, that God wants more than just my love. But I've been complicating things, it's just like me to overthink. Gotta keep it real simple, keep it real simple. Bring everything right back to ground zero, cause it all comes down to this. Love God and love people. Knowing life will be found when love can be loud, cause love is what it's all about. I tell myself to keep this up, that all God wants is just my love. No more complicated things, no more need to overthink. Gotta keep it real simple, keep it real simple. Bring everything right back to ground zero, cause it all comes down to this. Love God and love people. Love is kind, rescues hearts and changes lives. Love is all we need to make things right. Gotta keep it real simple. Oh, it's really so simple. Oh, gotta keep it real simple. Keep it real simple. God and love people. We're living in a world that keeps breaking. But if we want to find a way to change.
30,000 square feet. What would you do with that kind of possibility? Would you strategize your future? Or get lost in the past? Will you fill it with stories? Or use it to empty your mind? Would you explore your spirituality? Or focus on improving your community? Will you use it to work late? Or just work it? Could you create lasting impressions? Or a brief, delicious one? Our vision for the 224? 30,000 square feet of endless possibilities.
Welcome back. We're talking with Pastor Todd Yonkman, and we're talking about his ministry as a transitional pastor. Talk to us today about your ministry now and why you think your whole life has prepared you for this moment.
Well, my ministry now is in Granby. This is a church, again, that has experienced some decline and that is looking to reconnect with its neighborhood, or really it's trying to find its way forward. One of those options is perhaps to merge with another UCC in town. There are actually two congregational churches about 2 miles apart from each other in Granby, which is not a big town, and so that's one of the possibilities in terms of trying to develop for them a sustainable future. But in any case, whatever direction that they decide to go as a congregation, what needs to happen is to develop kind of a new purpose and identity for the congregation, whether it's a combined congregation or not. What I tell them is that if we have two, declining churches, it's like you have two leaky life rafts, and if you just connect two leaky life rafts together, we're all still going down. So there has to be some sort of transformational moment in that process, whatever happens. And really, that is kind of the heart of what I would like my ministry to be going forward. I'm trying to develop my ministry beyond what I do simply in the local congregations. Another perhaps unique or surprising aspect of my spiritual journey is that about 20 years ago, I started a Zen meditation practice. So I'll try to keep it a short story, but I happened to come across in the town of West Chicago, where I started out. In the next town over, there was a Roman Catholic convent, a community of nuns, and they advertised a Zen Christian meditation retreat. And I had been interested in developing that sort of, that meditation piece of spirituality, and that kind of got me on this path. And since then, I do regular retreats. I'm actually a member of the Worcester Zen Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts. But I've never really figured out I know there are a lot of people who are interested, and I know, Reverend Bess, like you do yoga practice, and I know people are very interested in these practices, and I want to figure out a way how to offer the benefits of meditation to more people, Christian people, any people, all people, every person. So that's one a kind of aspect of my ministry that I'm developing. Another aspect of my ministry is I'd like to be able to increase my ability to help people by coaching other congregations and other pastors and other leaders in how to lead people through these transitions. And so I'm currently in training with the International Coaching Federation, and I'm going through the different coaching certifications to become, you know, a certified leadership organizational coach. And so those are different sort of tools that I have in my toolkit. And one of the reasons why I reached out to you, Reverend Bess, was because I know that you're doing some amazing things here in terms of being, what's the term that you use for it? A soulpreneur. Soulpreneur. I love it. I'm really excited about learning how to do some of those things myself, because you know, the nature of how people access the religion and those spiritual paths is changing radically, and I love, this is what I have, I love people, and this is what I have to offer, is those gifts of the spirit. And so how can I do that in a way that connects with people even beyond the local congregation, although that's certainly in the mix.
But the heart of it is what you just said, which is, how do we help congregations have more sustainable futures?
Right.
And so it is, in using that broad toolbox, it might mean doing things differently and finding resources another way. And I think that's exactly what you're talking about, as you help congregations find their life and their life flow and their lifeblood. It's all right there in that relationship with them. There is still value. Even though there might be a handful of people, there's still value there.
Oh,
that's what you're discovering.
Yeah, of course there is. And I take real inspiration. And this is a surprising thing, too, I think, sometimes for people. For instance, when I just finished a transitional ministry in Stamford, Connecticut, which was very exciting. They sold their building. They're doing a restart. They called, after 400 years of white men, they called a Latino minister to help them restart in a new location.
Wow.
What was my point in that story?
So they had to relaunch and the restart, yeah, and you transition from there.
And I lost my train on that one. But anyway, the point is that one of the things that there's a Muslim community in Stamford that's just growing rapidly and cannot get a building big enough, and what is it about, why are they growing, and what is it about that community and that tradition that people really seem to value their faith community, you know? And I think a lot of it is that the churches that I serve operate under this sense of privilege and entitlement that they're not even aware of, that they've been getting all of this support from the broader culture that the culture is taking away. And so I think congregations need to look at our Muslim neighbors, our Jewish neighbors, our Buddhist neighbors, all of these other who are here, knowing that the broad culture is not, that they are a minority, that the broad culture is not supporting them, and how are they operating in a way that brings vitality? We need to learn, we need to humble ourselves and learn how to operate in a culture that no longer necessarily, you know, supports us in the way that they used to.
And so as you look at your ministry, you've had over 20 years in this thing called ministry, and as you look at the future, What is it that you would feel some satisfaction around if you can say you accomplished X? Like, before I finish, I want to have done... What's on that
well,
list?
Well, first of all, I'd like to have as many of these historic congregations, and in New England there are so many of these very historic congregations, as many of them sort of to have a legacy to hand on to the next generation as possible. For a brief time, I was a church planter, and so I know how difficult and risky it is to start from nothing.
Mm.
And even if churches have to restart or to relaunch or to reinvent themselves, that's better than just letting it completely die, and then there's nothing for any next generation to build on. So as many of those congregations that have a future, I would like to help as many of them find that future, whatever it is.
Ministry and, reboot.
Yeah. And then just to, you know, what I tell people, my phrase is, love the people, grow the network. And so I'd love just to, you know, to have a network where I can encourage people in all different sorts of ways, in all different sorts of media, whether it's writing, whether it's, you know, podcasts, whether it's coaching or consulting, any of those things. I love to be engaged with people like you who are doing creative things, and how can we support each other, you know, to share what we love and value in a way that really blesses other people.
And if people want to know more about your ministry, how do they find out more?
www.todd-grant-yonkman.net.
Powerful. And the church that you're currently serving?
First Congregational Church of Granby in Granby, Connecticut.
And when are services?
For the summer, they are at 9:30 a.m.
All right. Thank you, Pastor Todd Yonkman. Thank you so much for your service and your ministry.
Thank you.
It's Thursday night, and you're grabbing drinks with some friends. Started off with a pitcher for the table, which quickly becomes two. There's pool. And there's the photo booth.
All right, everybody, squeeze in. Say cheese!
Followed naturally by an order of wings. And another.
Can we get some extra ranch sauce?
Then there's the ceremonial nightcap.
So what are we doing this weekend?
And lastly, it's back to the car, which, if you're buzzed...
6-8-8-9-10-4. Order in the corner.
...could be the most expensive night of your life. Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
I've been listening to Rich Answers, a public affairs program of the Conference of Churches and a production of the 224 Ecospace. Reach out to us and tell us what you think. Look for Rich Answers, the Conference of Churches, and me, Reverend Dr. Shelley Bess, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Like us, follow us, share us.